at least the Old Testament portion of God's story. And then I've got another little seminar I want to talk about, and we'll be done by noon. And then just over the next course of the couple years, we'll just, when I'm here, we'll have some ad hoc gatherings and follow through. Because remember, we've already gone through the New Testament survey. Now, we've sort of incorporated an Old Testament survey in our redemption history, and we started with those 11 themes. So I've already worked through most of the New Testament in following those themes through the New Testament, finally to the book of Revelation. And we'll just cover that as we have time. So I wanted to start, though, with a little exercise before we get to those notes. I just have one. We have copies of these for everyone, right, Ms. Lourdes? Yeah. I want to do a little exercise. Lourdes is going to pass this out to each of you. I want to talk about critical thinking. And I'd like to get in groups of two. And I want you to read this article. Don't worry about the content. It's immaterial. We're not going to talk about the content. But I want you to see how many examples of poor reasoning you can find in this article. So this is a little poor reasoning. Yeah. Yeah. So don't try to examine his content like I agree with him, I disagree, the Bible says this, the Bible says that. I just want you to follow his logic, his reasoning, and look for holes. Look for things that are bad in his reasoning. So probably just read it, and then as, you know, maybe we can just do whatever, groups of two, and talk together and come up with as many flaws as you can find in this dude's reasoning. Yeah, it was published. Yeah, in the. I found it in the main Nashville newspaper. So, it was on the religion page of the Nashville, whatever it's called. So, no, I don't think so. Not from the Baptist Center for Ethics. So, yeah. No, that's a real article. Yeah. It's probably 15 years old. Well, let's just take a few more minutes, and then maybe we'll just talk together instead of small groups.
Testing mic.
Yeah. Nothing, huh? Okay. Yeah, Ferdy, thank you.
I was asking if this is real article. It's like, please don't use the Bible to justify death penalty. What is he? Why is he saying this? Okay. Why is he antagonistic?
So this is a pretty big issue in the United States.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
capital punishment, and
in Tagalog we have with this what we call hugot, which means he's coming out from a bad experience. Now he's writing this.
Okay.
And so now he's making a declaration like, don't use the Bible to justify death penalty.
Yeah.
So where else can we find? How can we define death penalty then?
Well, he says at the end, he says,
yes,
make the case with legal arguments, moral reasoning,
and social studies.
Yeah. So I don't really want to get into his particular views. I mean, okay. I disagree with them, and I guess most of us probably do, but that's not important. What I'm trying to do is, this is just a lead into critical thinking. So
yeah, okay.
I want to talk about being able to evaluate, analyze material.
Yes, okay.
And logically show the flaws and the holes in the reasoning so that we can communicate that to others.
Yeah, the first flaw, let's just say, for example, Paul here, making the case on who wants to pick up the first stone.
Yeah.
Making the case of the death penalty from New Testament is more problematic. Death penalty advocates. When he's mentioning this, that he's just basically saying that that the word sword in Romans 13 is nothing but a double-edged 3-foot fighting weapon.
Yeah.
So therefore, it should not be used as an excuse for death penalty. It has no correlation to death penalty. That's what he's trying to say.
Yeah.
So, but obviously that's not acceptable.
It's not.
It's becoming literal.
So when he says, who wants to pick up the first stone? That's a logical fallacy called the slippery slope.
Oh.
Okay, we're going to go through and explain a bunch of these. The slippery slope is the idea you state if A happens, then eventually Z will happen. So it's like there's a slippery slope. You just start here, and next thing you know, you've got all this.
Yeah.
So who wants to pick up the first stone is the idea. If we start with a death penalty, who knows where we'll end? Just people picking up stones and killing each other. Slippery slope. Yeah, good.
He makes a hasty generalization when he says, at least none of them has spoken publicly in favor of the death penalty, talking about most theo pretenders. I don't know if...
That's early part, right?
Yeah, that's early part. He's generalizing without... I mean, I don't know if...
Yeah, hasty generalization. It's also the argument called ad hominem. Ad hominem. Yeah, these are all in your notes. We'll go through them later. Against the man, yeah. It's when instead of trying to refute the logic of an argument, you just start to attack the person and the nature of the person. And we do that quite a lot, even in our preaching.
Yeah.
So a person has a view that we don't agree with, we attack the person. Look, he's divorced his wife. Uh-huh. He practices this kind of... Well, that doesn't have anything to do with actually refuting his logical position and his argument.
Uh-huh.
But it's effective, right? Yeah. So it works, but it's just bad logic, right?
What's the term?
When he theo pretenders.
Yeah, theo pretenders.
Yeah, so that's he's attacking them. They're just a theo pretender. Ad hominem. So instead of carefully examining their position and refuting it point by point, he's just calling them, you're just a theo pretender.
Could it be that he's trying to attack the credibility of the person? So
sure,
that
that's what you do.
Won't be acceptable.
With ad hominem, that's what you do. You attack the credibility of the person.
Yeah.
And therefore, because of this person's nature, his character, he did this, he did that, therefore...
Yeah.
And yet... A totally reprobate person can still make
a sound argument,
right? So we ad hominem is when you just don't worry about what he's trying to say. You just hack the person. Now, that usually works very good. And this is, that's especially effective. So we've just gone through that in our country, and I don't think it's ended, actually.
That's right.
It seems like it's just begun.
That's right.
Yeah, that's classic political jargon, right? Yeah, of course. Yeah, so because people who are not trained to think, which is just about everybody, they're easily swayed by the argument ad hominem.
That's right.
So it's very effective, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to look at, I want us to examine even in our own presentation as we're trying to present ideas and give clear, logical presentations for biblical truth. Sometimes we do the same fallacies like this. So good, Paolo.
How about the one that's in the
Put that mic in his face, would you please?
Mic.
Yeah, he's got one there.
We frequently say the Bible says it, I believe it, that settles it. The honest truth is that many of our moral arguments, we take a different sequence. I believe it, that supports, Bible supports me, that settles it. More of a generalization. Yeah, a sweeping generalization.
Yeah, good. Excellent. Great. Others? Oh, yeah, okay. That would be sort of ad hominem, right? So because Christians have taken text and used them to do horrible things, so people use the capital punishment to do horrible things. Yeah. In the one of these early paragraphs, he says, at least none of them has spoken publicly in favor of, you think it's the third paragraph, of parent cursing to the punishable offenses listed in the Old Testament. That's called the straw man. Straw man fallacy, yeah. Mm-hmm. The straw man is you ignore a person's actual position and substitute a distorted or misrepresented version, and then you attack that. So the person's argument is actually this, but instead you misrepresent his argument and create a straw man that kind of looks like the argument, but is really a different argument, and one that's much easier to attack. And you attack the straw man. So in this situation, nobody who's talking about death penalty is talking about parent cursing, Sabbath breaking, because death penalty, biblical death penalty advocates, they go before the law. Right? Yeah, so they go to the Genesis account, right? So this is a straw man. Instead of dealing with the real arguments, dealing with the fact that capital punishment is a pre-law event, he creates a straw man. Oh, yeah, okay, you really, if someone curses their parents, are you ready to stone them? Well, that's not what biblical death penalty advocates are saying. So he's creating a false argument that looks kind of like it, but it's much easier to attack.
Yeah.
You see? We should, but he doesn't. So what he doesn't do, he doesn't even mention the strongest argument that death penalty advocates have. He doesn't even mention it. So he fails to deal with the strongest part of their argument. He ignores it completely. Instead, he emphasizes, I mean, certainly it's a part of the argument, but it's not the strongest part of the argument. And so by ignoring or failing to take into account that whole issue, he's presenting a pseudo part of the argument, and then he attacks that. I haven't sold you yet. Yeah, but watch this. So if you and your wife are having an argument over some issues and you're trying to present your side, and she keeps focusing on the minor part of your presentation, and the main issue that you're trying to bring up, the main foundation, she won't even engage you at that, you're going to be frustrated. And you're going to keep forcing her, let's talk, but what about this? And instead, she tries to keep attacking this one little aspect of it, that maybe there's some give or take on that, but without even acknowledging the strongest part of your argument. That's what's called strongman. He doesn't even acknowledge that as a part of the argument. He carefully ignores it because he doesn't have an answer for that one. Right, yeah.
And so it's so hard to
categorize.
Right, yeah. How you're viewing away, or is this a legitimate, if you answer this, or... So that's where trying to weigh.
I know both sides of the argument, so that's the main argument that's put forth. And when it comes to the 37 or whatever specific capital punishment violations in the theocracy, death penalty advocates recognize that there's differences in a theocracy and a democracy. So, for example, they're not calling for death penalty for homosexuals. That's under the law. But it doesn't violate the fact that the principle of death penalty is still a biblical principle. Its application under the theocracy will be different than its application under democracy or various different other civil governments. But when you don't even deal with that argument, it's in essence putting up a straw man. So, yeah.
He says something here. Nevertheless, if you read the Old Testament literally to justify the American death penalty, then let's be consistent. So what he was trying to say here is that the only way that it can be justified is if you do it consistently, literally, like what the Bible says, stoning. So he's making an assumption already that that's the only way it can be justified.
And that also, at the risk of having Nixon mad at me, that's also a straw man, because people, death penalty advocates, are very clear in making a distinction between the theocracy and what they're trying to say in a democratic society. So he doesn't deal with that major issue there. Okay, any others? In what part that Rico mentioned, nevertheless, if we read the Old Testament literally to justify the American death penalty, let's be consistent. Let's practice literally the Old Testament form of death penalty. Now, this is called the red herring. Sonny, come on down here. Saved it for you. Red herring. Red herring. Red herring. Yeah. Yeah. I'll explain it to you as we progress. But in the red herring, you introduce irrelevant material to the issue being discussed so that people's attention is diverted away from the real points that are being made. So if you read mystery literature, the red herring is the clues that lead you away from the actual murder, right? That's called a red herring. So good mystery writers.
Misdirection.
Yeah, it's misdirection. Yeah, so they get you. And it goes back to a practice in the English fox hunt. So the way that they would train the hounds to follow a smell is, as they're training them, they would let the fox loose, and then they would follow the fox path, and in the A to Z from where the fox is and the dogs, they would get herrings. That's a very strong smell, and they would run them over. They would cross them over that path. And so the dogs then would come, and they'd get confused, and they would follow the red herring scent. And through gradually teaching them how to not be led astray by the red herrings, they would teach them to follow the scent, even in the presence of other stronger scents. So that's where the term comes from. But the red herring is when you throw some things in to lead people down a different direction, misdirection away from your main argument that you're trying to make. Okay, slippery slope, we've already talked about that. I know. Some things may have to change here.
Nevertheless.
Well, which part is the red herring? That nevertheless, if you read the Old Testament, which part of the document is the red herring?
Nevertheless, if we read the Old Testament literally to justify the American death penalty, then let's be consistent. Let's practice literally the Old Testament form of death penalty. No modern advocates of the biblical death penalty are even suggesting anything along this line, right? So it's a combination straw man and red herring. And also it's sort of an appeal to fear. Like, wow, what could this lead to? Slippery slope kind of mentality. One last one I think that I have before we progress. Yeah, no, two more. Is furthermore, the Roman method of the death penalty was not decapitation. The implication that one could draw from the use of the sword, the Roman method was crucifixion, the very form of Jesus' death penalty. This is the fallacy called cherry picking. Cherry picking. Cherry picking, or sometimes called the fallacy of incomplete evidence. Of incomplete evidence. It's sometimes called stacking the deck. Making selective choices among competing evidence to emphasize those results that support a given position while ignoring or dismissing any findings that do not support it. He fails to mention that the Roman death penalty for method was not crucifixion. It actually was decapitation. Crucifixion was for people who were not Roman citizens. That's why Peter is crucified. Paul was actually decapitated. Because as far as first century methodologies of killing people, decapitation was by far the most humane. Humane. Yeah, it's very quick. You've got an incredibly sharp axe.
Unless you have a dull axe.
Well, actually what would happen is you would have to tip the executioner. If you didn't tip him well enough, he would get a really dull axe.
Whoa.
And he'd take it, he'd make 7 or 8 hacks to finally kill you. Yeah, to make it brutal. But if you put enough, you know, you guys know something about that here in this country, don't you? You give enough little tip, you know, then he'll make sure, bam.
No pain.
There's no pain. I mean, so that's as close to lethal injection or, you know, whatever the most humane is.
Probably saying that you made a sweeping generalization about that nation.
Yeah, probably. Boom.
Do you consider that a fallacy?
That is a logical fallacy, yes. Okay, here, one last one. Now, watch this last one. This is his last paragraph. He says, make the case for the death penalty with legal arguments, moral reasoning, and sociological studies. Now, watch this. But please don't use the Bible to bypass the tough work of thinking deeply about how we apply biblical principles. That's the fallacy of contradiction. When a statement that is made that is inconsistent with itself to the point that it actually refutes itself. Don't use the Bible to bypass the work of using the Bible.
It's
stupid. Yeah, that's the fallacy of contradiction. It's the fallacy of stupidity. Yeah.
Or maybe...
I don't know. Yeah, that was probably before social media was really...
Maybe he's trying to avoid circular reasoning, which means that let's have other facts outside of the Bible verify it. That's what I think is...
Could be, yeah. Well, you give him the benefit of the doubt. Lord, do we have that video clip ready to go? Have it queued, but don't play it. I want to show this
Pastor
to you.
Paul, that suggestion.
Yeah.
I think this exercise is good, but I think the other side of the argument should be there before we read this. Read them both so that we would know if it's really ad hominem like sure. a theo pretender as an ad hominem would only it would only be an ad hominem because he
if you understood the other side of the argument. Yeah, so. I've never done this outside of the U.S. context, so I wasn't prepared for that. Yeah, and I didn't want a lengthy debate. I just wanted to start introducing yeah. some of these concepts and see how it easy is for these to slip in. Yeah. yeah. Well, I hope by the time we're done, we'll even be more frightened. But, I mean, Edgar called me out already. So, you know,
I think you're just
physician, heal thyself, apparently.
I think you're just trying to explain how Trump won the election.
Yeah, well, he's not the only guilty one.
Who did you vote for? I think we know who you voted for. Come on.
Who did you vote? Republican.
Who else? I started... this examination, I've always been fascinated with logical fallacies, and actually, when I began in August, I began this master's program that a few people are on with Asbury. I am fortunately now have been released, and I feel like a bird who's escaped the snare of the fowler. Very happy.
What about us?
Yeah, suckers. But I, you know, as I began to read some of the posts that others were making, my first thought was, are you kidding? Now, Ferdy and others, and I talked with Gilbert, have helped me to realize that a lot of the Filipinos were just being nice. And some have stopped being nice. Ferdy said he started getting sarcastic. I said... It takes something to make a Filipino sarcastic. So many things that we're reading, that we were, or you're still reading, some of you, I'm no longer reading. I think if I hear the term fresh expressions one more time, I'm going to just go ballistic. I saw there's so many just logical fallacies and so many things that were misdirection and so many holes, and I wondered if people were catching them. And I thought, let's just do a brief little training about critical thinking. So I went to YouTube and I started looking at some various different clips. And there's some fascinating sections, and you may want to do this afterwards. There's one, someone does logical fallacies in the songs of the Beatles. That's quite interesting. So they'll play a Beatles song and then give you the technical term of the logical fallacy that's being used. And that helped me more to understand these logical fallacies than trying to read the technical descriptions of them. I also found, and I'm going to show you a clip, this one uses five or six, most of them are commercials, and how these logical fallacies are used in commercials. Some of them humorously, but some of them without us even being aware. And when you see how all of the people who are trying to persuade us to think differently yeah. are using all these techniques, yeah. some are aware, some are not aware, yeah. I think it puts us on our guard.
Yeah.
And we begin to examine
right.
what we say, even what people that we love and respect
yeah.
say, right? So that we can think through... so that all of us, you know, we can be sharper,
yeah. Yeah.
Right.
you know, with one another, and so that the arguments that we make are much more cogent and more powerful.
Yeah.
Before
you do that, I just want to let you know that we have a Viber group.
Yeah.
Viber group. And we debate, we pour out
your soul.
Unfiltered.
Yeah.
Our unfiltered. It just happened we're pastors, so we can use
yeah,
those.
Yeah.
We cannot use those expletives, whatever.
Expletives, yeah, yeah,
yeah. I mean, you know, we can. So I'm a bishop, so
yeah, right. Yeah, bishops are not allowed to say this. Yes.
Nice, right?
Apparently.
But in our Bible, we really speak
good,
our
yeah.
minds.
Yeah, that's
and
good.
You're not part of it, so you don't really
know
exactly
know.
What's happening among the Filipinos.
Yeah. Joseph Bonifacio and I had a few little private conversations
yeah,
where
yeah.
I went along those lines.
There's
all right, let's watch this. Clip here.
cable company keeps you on hold, you get angry. When you get angry, you go blow off steam. When you go blow off steam, accidents happen. When accidents happen, you get an eye patch. When you get an eye patch, people think you're tough. When people think you're tough, people want to see how tough. And when people want to see how tough, you wake up in a roadside ditch. Don't wake up in a roadside ditch. Get rid of cable and upgrade to DirecTV.
That's a slippery slope, baby. Lizards eating your leg. Post hoc ergo, propter hoc.
Is that bad, taking aim at your decision to restrict use of nuclear weapons, your pledge not to strike nations, non-nuclear nations, who abide by the non-proliferation treaty? Here's what she said. She said, it's unbelievable. No other administration would do it. And then she likened it to kids on a playground. She said, you're like a kid who says, punch me in the face, and I'm not going to retaliate. Yeah. Your response?
I really have no response to that. Unless I check surveillance, not much of an expert on nuclear issues.
Appeal to the false authority.
So, all these seem the same.
Get a Sony. The technology in their cameras and camcorders makes it easy to get the best shot.
Exactly.
What do you know about cameras and camcorders?
Really? Does that child have a beard?
One real quick, maybe.
It's easy to get the best shot with Sony cameras and camcorders.
There we go. Thank you. Yeah, so the appeal to false authority, it's like, what do you know about cameras?
Yeah.
Are you kidding? Everybody takes my picture. So that's when you use a person who has a reputation in one area, but no expertise in another, but they say this is the way to go. Oh, well, but it's a false authority. They're an authority in one area, but have nothing to say about the other. All right, so.
Jay-Z and Beyonce appearing in a Clinton.
Yeah, okay.
There's still a redirection here. You still haven't answered our question. Who did you vote for?
That's a red herring there.
Red herring there. Watch the video and don't answer any question.
They're using.
I am.
And you're going down a slippery slope.
Let's go. Let's go down the slippery slope.
We want to hear your thoughts.
I was here when the election happened.
Who would you have voted for? That's the question.
Let's just say this. I'll say this, and this is all I'm going to say. Since the first time I voted in 1976, I have never voted anything but a straight Republican ticket. So that's all I'm going to say about that. Critical thinking. I will say that in 37 years of marriage, my wife and I have never once even had a political discussion. Politics or something we have no interest in. I never watch the news. I never read the newspaper. I have no interest in politics. I did not follow anything about this election. My wife and I, 37 years, never talked about politics, who we're going to vote, ever, until this year. And we actually had a few little arguments. My wife, for the first time in her life, she voted a third-party candidate. Constitutional Party, so she did a write-in candidate. So, critical thinking. And again, this I was initiated by this because of our Asbury program, but I do think never before do we live in a culture where information is so readily available. And there are people constantly trying to change the people that we lead, trying to change their opinion, trying to convince them of certain things. And people generally are not prepared to how to critically examine an argument and examine it from a biblical context. And I'm not sure that we as pastors have actually been trained to do that also. So we'll just take a little bit and look through some of this material and see if we can strengthen our critical thinking skills. So what is critical thinking is the discipline process of evaluating information for the purpose of discovering the truth. Discipline process of evaluating information for the purpose of discovering the truth. A couple thoughts here. Discipline is a requirement for critical thinking. It's one of the reasons so few people do it. It's hard work to think through what you're reading. It's disciplined. It's also a learned process. It doesn't come intuitively for most people. Now, some may have talents that make it easier, but everyone has to learn the process. I think I'm probably wired that way a little bit more than the average person. I recently redid the Strength Finder test, only this time I took the full test. And for those of you who never have, it's well worth it. They will give you all 34 themes in order. Yeah. Well, that's my third time, and there's four of them always stay the same, but there's always. But the ones that I had in the other two showed up in the top seven. So yeah, there's just there's a little bit of movement, but I did it because one of our pastors in Pretoria in South Africa is a licensed Gallup instructor of Strength Finders. And we had a meal together when I was there last year, and he talked to me about Gallup's findings and that the top 10 are fairly significant, even all the way to the top 15. And the reason why, as you take the test at different times, different ones show up, it's because what happens is you probably have a main set of 10 or 12, somewhere in that range, but based on current life experience, you will tap into or draw upon particular ones at particular times. And so that's why at different times the test results will be different. So it was really helpful. And now whenever I do any assessments, I always insist that the people I'm assessing get the full test because I'm interested in the top 10 and the bottom five. The bottom five, yeah. Because it's good to know the ones that you have just no chance of ever intuitively becoming. So very insightful. Made all of my children fall on the floor laughing when they saw that their daddy's top five. It just confirmed what they've known all their life. My top five or my bottom five? The interesting thing is that Gallup has eight thinking themes, right, in the strategic thinking quadrant, and seven of those eight are in my top eight. Wow. Yeah, the only one I don't have is futuristic. So
out of eight, you got seven.
Yeah, at the top eight of mine. So I go, I have strategic thinking themes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, maximizer 7, and then strategic thinking theme eight. Yeah, so seven of my top eight. So the point I'm making is I'm uniquely wired to do critical thinking, more than the average person, right? So whereas at my bottom five, my bottom one is includer.
Empathy.
Huh?
Bottom 32 is empathy.
Empathy is number 30.
No, I guess you have woo. Woo.
Woo is number 33. My bottom five are includer, positivity, woo, empathy, and adaptability. Bottom five, baby.
Includer is my bottom five.
Yeah,
bottom
yeah. So
that's my top five.
Woo,
I know. I know. So
I understand you better.
Yeah. So that's it right there. Okay. But you know, I think well. So my skills are highly developed but very narrow. Highly developed but very narrow. So I can't do many things well, but there are a few things that I can do really well. And I'm just wired that way. So I'm making the point that critical thinking is a learned process. It just doesn't come intuitively for most, although I may be one of the exceptions. I may be one of the exceptions because of the way that God wired me, obviously. So my first thought is always, I doubt it. I doubt it. Why? Prove it to me. Give me the evidence. I was just with Timothy Lowe in Malaysia over the weekend, and he just got back from, he was in Vietnam, I guess, for the week with, were you there? Yeah. No. Ho Chi Minh, yeah, for they were, just did some training. And so we're talking, and he used Psalm 133, and he did some teaching from that, and he made the point that this is near the end of David's life. And so my first thought is, I don't think so. Can you prove that to me? Do you have evidence for that? And, you know, I caught him off guard. He said, So the whole time he was there, he was looking for evidence. He never actually found it, you know. But that's just my, when someone tells me, my first filter is, I don't think so. Prove it. I don't think that's right. Or you got to prove to me that that is right. So, I mean, that's just everything I hear whenever anyone says anything. That's just always, it's just an intuitive reaction, you know. So I doubt everything I hear unless there's strong evidence for it. And I'm a natural skeptic, yeah. So if negativity was a theme, that would be. I have cynical leanings. Apart for the gospel of grace, I would be a terrible cynic. Say again? Deliberative? No, it's not very high. Yeah, no.
But it's funny your book says faith to live by.
I know. But that's the only thing that's kept me spiritually alive. Yeah, thank God for Lita. But I have to preach the gospel to that part of myself every day. So, because I get out of bed skeptical. I get out of bed cynical. Yeah. I question everything, you know. My first thoughts of the day, I mean, natural first thought is why things won't work, why it's going to go wrong, why that idea is stupid and ridiculous. I just start that way. So I have to constantly preach the gospel to myself in that area. But it does make me uniquely gifted, especially I'm excited about my new job with Kevin York. I've been preparing for a job like this. I didn't know anything like this. I've been preparing for something like this for a number of years, knowing that I was heading in that direction. And I'm uniquely wired for that.
So you're a sniffing dog.
I am a sniffing dog, yeah.
What's
the position again? Say again?
Executive strategist,
yeah. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what it ends up becoming in the end. So I, when it comes to critical thinking, I do it pretty intuitively, but I don't think the average person does.
Yeah.
I don't think the average person does. And so that's why it's a process. It's a learned process. It's something that we have to consciously think about doing. And it requires multiple skills. But I think some of them are learned skills. You know, and I think depending on the way you're wired, you'll learn them easier. Some of you will probably never become, you know, really good critical thinkers. Others will find it a much easier thing to do. But we can at least begin to hone our thinking skills so that we're evaluating everything that we hear better. Yeah. Number two, critical thinking includes, here's a fancy word, metacognition. Meta, M-E-T-A, cognition, C-O-G-N-I-T-I-O-N. Metacognition is a word that means thinking about thinking. It involves an awareness of our own reasoning process, presuppositions, and biases. You see, when I just learned this word here when I started this probably a month or two ago, that word. But when I saw the word, I realized I've been doing that since I was a small child. I mean, the first memories and thoughts about myself is I have thoughts thinking about myself, thinking about thinking. Thinking about my thinking process. Like, I used to spend a lot of time by myself thinking and thinking about how I was thinking and thinking about how I analyze information and what my thinking processes are in a situation and trying to think how they thought and how they arrived at their conclusions and try to understand their thinking process. And so I've just been doing this intuitively as long as I can think. I mean, I turned 60 last month, so I've probably been doing this for 50-plus years. But critical thinking involves now consciously thinking about your thinking process. How do you arrive at conclusions? How do you get there? What's your process? And is the process sound? And this is what critical thinking is. The more you start thinking about what are your presuppositions that you start with when you're starting to read this information, are you aware of what they are and how they're going to be the filter that are going to cause you to read or hear this material in a particular way? Are you familiar with your biases? I'm constantly trying to evaluate my biases. That's one of the main reasons I love to travel internationally. And when I like to have intimate conversations with people about their nature, about their culture, about how they think and how their nation processes various different kinds of ideas, because I always see my own biases, because I process information as a 60-year-old white American middle-class male. And each one of those terms have biases that go along with it. Evangelical, yeah, former Roman Catholic evangelical. And so there's a whole set of biases that go along with each one of those. And so when I'm talking to people, I'm trying to think, now how do you approach that kind of information? And when you hear that, what does that do to you? So that helps reveal my biases. Now, I know in this life I can never get past my biases, but at least I know when I hear that information, I'm already going to be biased to think this way. And so I try to, if I can, transcend my bias to analyze that information from a biblical context, realizing I never escape my own presuppositions and I can never totally evaluate information from a totally neutral biblical standpoint. But at least gradually, I think I can become more and more aware. That's metacognition, thinking about our thinking process. And it's essential to critical thinking. All right? You want to take a break, or you want
to? I'm just trying to I'm thinking about how he thinks.
That might be a good sign for a break.
Yeah. When Sonny starts
thinking, yeah, it's time for a break.
All right, let's come back at 15 after, according to that clock? Shall we?